Welcome to the 8th episode of Tune In with Trey. I'm your host, Trey Johnson, and the word of the day is accountable, which means obligated to explain, justify, and take responsibility for one's actions, and to answer someone, such as a person with more authority. Be on the lookout for when I use it. The song of the day is Back in the Day by Ahmad. Why? Your boy just turned 20. As of September 26th, the kid turned 20. So I'll be thinking about how back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and reminisce on all the good things that have happened to me, all the people who have helped me along the way, all the bumps I've taken on my journey to 20 years of age, man. 20 years, that's two decades. That's crazy. I'm truly blessed to still be here. Today's theme is Black Lives Matter, with a focus on growth. This theme was inspired by all my church friends and family back home. Shout out to the First Baptist Church of Progress Village and Growing 80, their student ministry. Y'all have really played an intricate part of who I am today. Within Growing 80, we did this thing called Grow Moments, where we would get up and share how we've grown in our relationship with God. That's essentially what today is, a Grow Moment with a Black Lives Matter twist at the end. So let's go. Back in the day, when I was just a little Negro, this was about a month ago, I was just 19, you know. I came back to school around the 27th of August. School started that Monday on the 31st. So that weekend, my family came up and got me settled in my place in Gainesville. My mother told me to be safe, mask on when you're around people, and keep your numbers down. I was like, yeah, okay, I hear you. This wasn't the first time she had told me this. So they left that Sunday the 30th, I started school the 31st, and by Tuesday, September 1st, I was out. I went and dropped off a mattress topper at my grandmother's house, and then later that night, I went to hang out with some friends. We had a game night. There were 7 of us. No mask. Cause like, who wears a mask in the house? For real. Anyway, hung out on the 1st. 2 days later on the 3rd, I went to lunch with 3 different friends and then hung out to watch the basketball game later that night. Friday the 4th, my family came back so we could paint that weekend. My aunts came by to see everybody. They left, and I was right back to hanging out again that Tuesday the 8th to watch another basketball game. Wednesday the 9th, I had a migraine. I didn't think much of it because I had those from time to time, and they usually last about 2 days. Thursday the 10th, I had a runny nose, I was sneezing, and I felt weak. You know, cold-like symptoms. Then I got the call. My friend from the game night called me to let me know that she had tested positive for the coronavirus. A lot of people from the game night were also sick. Some of them were quite mad with the person who tested positive. Not me. I acknowledged my part in the situation. I was accountable for my actions, realizing I was there. I didn't have to be. Honestly, I was shaken by the news. The next day, I scheduled my test for that Sunday the 13th. Originally, I wasn't going to tell anyone until I knew my results. I changed my mind when a friend asked to hang out. I had to let them know that I couldn't because I might have the virus. I discussed it with my mother and we decided that I was probably positive. We also figured out that I had been in contact with her and the rest of the family, and that I should backtrack to everybody I had been in contact with and let them know. I had to text my grandmother, the friends I went to lunch with, the boys I watched the game with, and my aunts. I also texted my nucleus of friends to keep me in their prayers because, to be honest, I was scared. That first night was rough. Like, I pray every night before I go to sleep, but I was really praying to wake up the next day. Something I would say I take for granted. It reminded me of that uneasy feeling I had for my first knee surgery in 7th grade, which is a story for another time. Fast forwarding a little bit, I got tested, had to wait 3 days for my results, which did come back positive. However, I cleared quarantine on the 18th, 10 days from when my symptoms started. Now, I'm back living life, but I'm moving different these days. I'm back at work, which was an experience because I was a little afraid of people. And that's pretty much where it stops. I don't really hang out much anymore. And if I do, it's a 3-person max. 3 people, including me. I always keep a mask on me when I go out. And my relationship with God has gotten stronger. God has a way of letting us know when we've strayed away from Him. And I attribute all of my trials to being distant. In this case, I think my prayers had gotten repetitive in the sense that they didn't have sustenance. My prayers were mediocre because I was just going through the motions. I had also been out of touch with the Word. In this time, while I was afraid, I looked to God often. I'm big on music, as you all know, and the song that kept me going and strong during that time was Still Here by 2103. The song goes something like this. I'm still here, I'm still here, 'cause the blood still has its power. I'm still here, I'm still here, because the blood still has its power. I'm still here because God didn't give up on me. That's not to say that God gave up on those who have died from COVID-19. I think their life had simply run its course and God called them home. One thing I've learned is that God doesn't turn His back on us when we turn our back on Him. He keeps reaching out. In a sense, maybe God's trying to reach out through the death of others. Now, don't quote me on that. Now, I'm not God. I don't know exactly how these things work, but I will trust in Him, knowing that all things are working for mine and your good. My former youth pastor recently reached out to his past students who are now out in the world. You know, we're young adults now. He reached out to us to reconnect and set up a weekly Bible study, or as we call them, grow sessions. The lesson that sticks out to me thus far is one about trials and tribulations. The message here was that God places trials in our lives to test us, teach us, and transform us. So as I reflected on how I've learned and grown from my trials over the years, my 20 years of life, I started to think about the world and how the message applies to elements of our society. I thought about how Black people have been fighting this battle for equal justice for centuries, and then it hit me. America's justice system is immature. It disproportionately targets people of color and doesn't properly account for wrongdoings. So I pose the question, when will America grow up? To me, America's this little kid who never really broke out of the nightlight phase. Poor kid is afraid of the dark. The light has been dimmed over the years, but I've yet to see it be dimmed lately. In fact, I think the light is brightening and more lights are being turned on. If you aren't getting the picture I'm painting, the dark is equivalent to Black lives or darker skinned people. I'm not sure why our skin is such an issue, but it is. But to break that cycle, you have to grow up eventually. I think it's important to highlight the missed opportunities for growth in our country. Now, I'm not going to go back to slavery. I'm just going to look at the 20 years that I've been here. And we're going to start in 2012 with Trayvon Martin. Martin was shot and killed walking home from the convenience store by George Zimmerman, the neighborhood watchman, because he had never seen him before. Zimmerman is not charged. Moving on to 2014, in July of that year, Eric Garner was choked to death in New York City, sparking the original I Can't Breathe chant. The officer who choked him was fired 5 years later for his actions. In August, Literally the next month, we lose Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, as Officer Darren Wilson shoots him as he is running away. This leads to the cry of, "Hands up, don't shoot." Wilson is not charged. 2 months later, in October, Laquan McDonald is shot 16 times. The first officer to fire has shown up seconds before. That officer was found guilty of murder. Now this might be a little bit of growth right here. This is different from what we've seen before. But the next month, in November 2014, 12-year-old Tamir Rice is killed for playing with a toy gun. The officer is not indicted, citing no criminal misconduct. Now let's pause real quick. Let's say that each incident is a separate night, and when an officer isn't charged, the nightlight is on, and when an officer is charged, the nightlight is off. In 5 nights, the light has been turned off once. Moving on to 2015, yes, we finally make it to 2015. In April of that year, Walter Scott is pulled over for a broken taillight, but is killed running away. The officer is convicted of murder and sentenced to 20 years. Now, this is a little bit more convincing. In the past 3 nights, the light has been off twice. Later that same month, Freddie Gray dies in police custody while being transported to the police station. Now, I don't know what happened to Freddie, but somebody does know what happened to Freddie, and they have to be somebody in uniform. But no officers are charged here. Light on. In July, Sandra Bland is found dead in her cell. They say suicide. Again, a lot is not known here. But because no officers are charged, I'm just going to say the light is on. Now, to 2016. Philando Castile is shot in the driver's seat of his car after the officer told him to grab his license and registration. The officer is not charged. Light on. In 2018, Botham John is shot and killed in his home because the officer entered the wrong apartment. She is charged with murder and sentenced to 10 years. Light off. And finally, we arrive in 2020. It has been a year, hasn't it? It's just too crazy. In March, Breonna Taylor was killed in her home after officers bust into the apartment searching for drugs. Her boyfriend shot once in self-defense. Officers returned over a dozen shots, many connecting with Taylor. One of the three officers is charged, but not for the death of Taylor, for wanton endangerment, or essentially, the shots that hit her neighbor's walls. Light on. Of the 11 cases I've mentioned, only 3 have resulted in officers being charged. Maybe you don't understand the nightlight analogy. Let's look at a house with 11 rooms. Let's say the lights are on all day. Now, you gotta pay for lights. That's just how it works. That's our society, you know, you got light bills. In our case, 3 rooms are dark and 8 are lit up. And that bill continues to rise. Now, maybe you can afford to keep the lights on all day. But as for me and my people, y'all are running up a bill that we no longer have the capacity to pay. We are struggling to cope with the fact that our lives don't matter. It's sad. What's even sadder is the fact that the cases I mentioned are the ones that have been decided. Pending cases include George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Rayshard Brooks. I'll throw Jacob Blake in there too, even though he's still alive. What happened to him was just wrong. The black community can't pay for the lights anymore. And my suggestion to America is to turn the damn lights off. The issue here is that very few are being held accountable for their action. It's almost as if officers don't have to answer to a higher authority. I think that's why this keeps happening. Repercussions a little to none as it pertains to the death of black lives at the hands of police officers. When will it end? My family has this pep talk that I invented when I was in middle school. My younger brother had a basketball game, and being the bigger brother, I wanted to give him a pep talk. I wanted to motivate him. My motivational speech was all of 5 words. And those words were, do good, don't mess up. That's all I could come up with at the time. But that mantra stuck. Anytime one of us had a game or a big test or we were going to work, it was always the same. Do good, don't mess up. Reflecting on that phrase, I realize it's deeper than those 5 words. Messing up is inevitable. But the idea is not to mess up too much, because if you mess up too much, you're no longer doing good. America's been messing up a lot lately. Therefore, things are not good. So in these remaining cases, and going forward, I need America to grow up as I did. Doing good and not messing up. That way, my future kids won't have to tell their future kids about some, I remember way back when. What? I remember way back when. Huh? I remember way back when. What? Back in the days. Back in the days. Back in the days when black men and women were killed and nothing was done about it. Back in the days when we had to march and protest to prove that we were human. Back in the days when I was just a little Negro. That's the end of episode 8. Thank you all for listening. I've been swamped with schoolwork recently, causing a little delay in content. But don't worry, got a lot of ideas in my head. I'm gonna be all right, and as soon as I get some time, I'm gonna get it out to y'all. Just need you to keep rocking with me. Be on the lookout for more content and episodes. And until then, stay tuned. JJ, out.